The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Ox here with a podcast about the language of politics. The more honest it sounds, the less honest it may turn out to be. The setting for this is Iceland. Not the usual place you'd expect to hear something about political rhetoric. I mean, until recently, Iceland was really ignored by the rest of the world. But, I mean, what was it? A place with volcanoes? A name that made no sense? And it was full of people who supposedly still believed in elves. Then, just in the past few years, came WikiLeaks and volcanic ash messing with flights in Europe and financial apocalypse for Icelanders, much worse than anything experienced here in the US in 2008. Iceland, for the rest of the world and for the people who lived there, it became weird and scary. So how did the voters of the capital Reykjavik react to all of this? Well, famously, they put a professional comedian in the mayor's office. And lucky for us, this guy, Jón Gnarr, is obsessed with language. He recently completed his term of office, and he wrote a book, roughly in that order. I spoke with him. Here's my report.
On the night he was elected in June 2010, Jón Gnarr made this promise to his supporters. Welcome to the revolution. Sounds very punk rock, which is kind of what it was. Jón Gnarr, former punk, anarchist and surrealist comedian, was the new mayor of a city whose people were desperate. Their bank accounts decimated, their futures thrown into doubt. They'd just voted for a man who, in his campaign, had promised, among other things, to end all debt. Forever. His political party, a new one, was made up of artists and musicians, and it had a memorable name.
In Icelandic, it's Besti flokkurinn,
which translates roughly to the best party. Part of the name's appeal was the pun in English. You know, I was at the best party last night. Even though the pun doesn't work in Icelandic, Gnarr says most people got the joke anyway. And the whole thing was a joke, this political campaign, until it ceased to be, which was...
probably not until right after I got elected.
And that was when Gnarr realized he'd have to make good on his campaign promises. Not literally on things like ending debt or reducing the number of Santas to one, but on something. He immediately ran into problems. There were insults from real politicians who told him...
that I am incapable of doing my job, I'm not qualified, and that I'm a clown.
And they tried to show him up, Gnarr says, by using the densest possible bureaucraties.
I master the Icelandic language very well. I'm very good at Icelandic. But in Iceland, like in many other countries, the political culture has evolved into some sort of a subculture with a different language. They have terms and words that ordinary people just don't understand.
Gnarr and his best party colleagues countered this way of talking by satirizing it to the point of absurdity. They came up with fake initiatives, outrageously condescending ones, supposed to show how much they cared about certain groups, like the disabled and women.
I openly said that we were willing to listen more to women. We would even have meetings with women and we would record everything that they had to say so that future generations could listen to it. And introducing like a hotline where you could call a certain toll-free number and listen to women.
Gnarr knew he was treading a fine line, but most people seemed to get what he and his colleagues were up to.
We may be playful and sometimes I will sound ridiculous, but I'm harmless.
There were some of Reykjavik's residents who wanted him to be a little less harmless, a little more rage against the machine. But that was never Gnarr's revolution. Yes, he was tapping into the outrage at the political and business cabal that had ruled Iceland. His response was to poke fun at it, show it up as irresponsible, and leave Icelandic voters in a better position to make more informed choices next time. And funnily enough, this one-time anarchist high school dropout is now regarded as having brought much-needed stability to the mayor's office. He generally didn't interfere with the day-to-day running of Reykjavik. He left that to the city managers. Instead, he pushed hard on issues like gay rights and improving public spaces, while also overseeing painful budget cuts. Most refreshing for many was his refusal to run for a second term. And leaving politics has allowed Gunnar to write a book and visit the United States.
My first time in the U.S. was in 1989, and people would ask me where I was from, and I would say I was from Iceland, and nobody had a clue what I was talking. They didn't know what Iceland was. But nowadays, when I'm somewhere and being asked, where are you from? And I say, I'm from Iceland, and people would say, ah, Björk.
Björk, perhaps inevitably, is a close friend of Gunnar's. And as well known as she is around the world, Gunnar is also making a name for himself, also becoming a sort of cultural ambassador for Iceland. He jokes that the country should rename itself Björkland in recognition of its artistic riches.
Once I was in a radio debate with the former mayor, and she said that we were just a bunch of artists, and she spoke of artists like some subhumans or something, like people who can't pay their bills or organize their daily life or something. And that made me very angry. And I said, what is this country of ours famous for, if not art and artists? From the early beginning with writing and the sagas and then with, especially with music. Iceland is world known for its music and its musicians. I compare claustrophobia, crystalline,
empty man, the light. It's not clear, even to young Gunnar, what's next for him. He says he's still trying to make sense of his 4 years in power. He's none too happy with the results of Reykjavik's recent elections. Young voters stayed away from the polls, his political allies didn't do well, while a party that opposes the construction of what would be Reykjavik's first mosque did do well. Gunnar's only plans for now are, as you might expect, out of left field.
I will definitely go to Texas, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do there. But I have noticed that many of my followers on Facebook, for instance, are from Texas. So I'll definitely have to go there and talk to the Texans.
And who knows where that will lead? Sitting mayors in the Lone Star State facing re-election, you've been warned. For The World, I'm Patrick Cox. Björk there, doing her bit for Björkland. And she's going to be everywhere, you know. She's got a retrospective, a major one, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York next year. So it's just going to be 24-hour Björk channel. And you may have heard an Icelandic story in the news quite recently, something that Jón Gunnar feels passionately about, as it happens. The Icelandic government has refused to issue a passport to a 10-year-old girl born in Iceland because her name is Harriet. Harriet is not on the list of approved names, a list maintained by a government body known as the Icelandic Naming Committee. Now, Jón Gunnar, like little Harriet, he has had his name rejected by that committee. He told me about it.
We have a very strict naming law in Iceland, and the Icelandic tradition is that there are no last names. You are the son or the daughter of your father. If you're a man, you are just the son of your father. If your father's name is Peter, then you are Peter's son. if you are his daughter, you are Peter's daughter. That's the Icelandic naming tradition. But during the colonial time with Denmark, many people from the ruling class adopted Danish surnames because it was
advantageous.
Yes. I mean, it's with a fancy Danish name, you were a bit above everybody else. And then the common people in Iceland wanted also to get a fancy last name, especially with people moving from the countryside and to the city. People wanted to call themselves by maybe the place they were from, originated from. Like if your family was from the area around Hekla Mountain, for instance, you would want to have Hekla as your last name. But so they made a law that according to Icelandic naming traditions, nobody was allowed to take a last name. And this was made in 1928, I think. But everybody who had a last name before the law, they got to keep their name and also their descendants. And then when people from other countries started moving to Iceland, then this became a problem because they were not allowed to keep their family names and had to adopt something in accordance with the Icelandic naming tradition, blah, blah, blah. So the law was changed again. And now if you move from another country to Iceland, you get to keep your name. But the ordinary Icelandic person cannot take up a family name, and that creates discrimination between people. I was not at good terms with my father, and his name was Kristinn. And so I was Kristinsson, and I did not want to be Kristinsson. And I was fascinated with surnames, with family names. And I was baptized Jón Gunnar Kristinsson. And I changed Gunnar into Gnar when I was 16. I changed it. I wanted to be recognized as my name. I am Jón Gnar. I am not Jón Kristinsson. that's somebody else. So that's been my battle with the authorities for most part of my life, to the right to bear my name, because they will not recognize it because it's not in accordance with the Icelandic naming tradition.
Still to this day, they won't let you take that.
No. And I have argued, you know, if, for instance, let's say that Robert Mugabe would move to Iceland, they would not have any problem with him calling himself Robert Mugabe, and his family would be the Mugabe family.
That's an interesting example of a
Because they cannot, according to international law, a country cannot force you to change your name. It's just nonsense. So Robert Mugabe could be Robert Mugabe in Iceland, but I cannot be Jón Gnar. And that just isn't fair. So that's been my battle to get my name recognized. In my Icelandic passport, I am Jón Gnar Kristinsson. You know, there is a naming committee, and you can apply if you want to name your child something that has never been done before. Like if you're a fan of Lady Gaga and you want to name your child Isabella Gaga, you have to apply to the naming committee if you are allowed to name your kid Gaga, and they will accept or reject it. And
Yeah, we did an interview with an Icelandic journalist when, I think it was last year, there was a girl whose parents wanted to call her something that wasn't on the list. I can't remember
Blair.
What the name was.
Blair.
But didn't she win?
But she had to go through the court system because they refused, they denied the request, and she filed a case against the state, and she won. And in that particular case, their argument was that, or the government's argument was that it's a boy's name, Blair. So it's embarrassing, really. It's just, And their argument is also like, oh, if we don't have a naming committee, people will just name their children Satan and Hitler and whatever. And it's like, no, they will not. I mean, there's no dog names committee, and there's no, I've never seen a dog called Satan or Hitler.
You can imagine there might be one if he had a, you know, coloring on his face with that like mustache thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, most people just name their dogs regular dog names like Spot. Spot. I mean, you don't need a naming committee. And I will continue and fight for my right to be me.
Right. And Gunnar, is that a, that is just a slightly shortened version of your middle name. Nobody else is called Gunnar, correct?
No. It's a name I invented, and it's a part of my identity, and it's also the name I'm known under. It's me, and it's part of who I am and what I do.
Jon Gunnar. And I'm happy to say that's his official podcast name. Alas, we don't issue passports yet. That's it for today. There are pictures of Jon Gunnar, video 2, at pri.org/language. Be sure to check out our sister pods at soundworks.org. I just listened to the latest Sideshow podcast, all about online recaps of TV shows, specifically a YouTube recap called Gay of Thrones. Yes, Gay of Thrones. It's hilarious. Soundworks.org. The pod is on Facebook at the World in Words page. I'm on Twitter. My handle is a shortened version of my name. A bit like Jon Gunnar, I suppose. Patrick Cox. P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. See you next time.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.